This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're on Saturday Magazine with Paul and Fiona. It is just shy of 11:15. Paul, who's our next guest?
We're going to be talking to Professor Daryl Higgins from the ACU. And Daryl, just before we say hello to you, I just want to say that I received a message this morning when we announced you as a guest from one of our volunteers here, Chris Ferner, who said that Professor Higgins has been a long-time Joy member during the 2000s and was very much involved in various programs on Joy as far back as our time in Coventry Street. So you've got a lot of history with Joy, so we thank you for your support. But the reason we want to talk to you is that you've just produced a very interesting and very important to our community, a research paper on the prevalence of diverse genders and sexualities within Australia. Good morning, and please tell us about the study.
Good morning. Lovely to be with you, Paul and Fiona. And I should say happy midsummer to you both and to all of the listeners. Look, this paper was some analysis that we did of a major study that I'm part of, the Australian Child Maltreatment Study. My colleagues and I had designed this study to measure the prevalence of maltreatment. And it was a byproduct of that that we've got this amazing paper that talks about not only the increased risk of experiencing child maltreatment that are associated with diverse genders and sexualities in Australia, but because we did such a good job of designing the study to be representative of the entire population, it's actually the first study that we have that accurately measure the prevalence of diverse genders and sexualities in and of itself, let alone the staggering data that we found about the relationship with increased risk of having experienced child maltreatment.
So just give us a couple of highlights of the study, Daryl, but also just give our audience an understanding of, you know, how do you define child maltreatment? Because I know there are a couple of things that come into that topic.
Yes, yeah. So maltreatment, it's mostly about acts by parents, but not just. So we used a definition that looked at five different types. So our maltreatment types include sexual abuse, physical abuse, psychological or emotional abuse, exposure to domestic violence. So that's, you know, between parents or carers, and finally neglect. And so those five types, we used some of the best measures that are available internationally in order to ask over a telephone survey of a random sample of Australian population to understand what is the likelihood that people have experienced child maltreatment. But as I said, we really wanted to focus on understanding, is this something that is evenly distributed across the population, or are there some people that have a higher risk? And of course, one of the things that we showed in our initial results that were published back in April last year was that women reported significantly higher rates of child abuse right across all the different types, but particularly sexual abuse. That was one that really stood out. And so we knew that gender differences were there, but in that first study, we didn't separate out diverse genders, nor did we separate out on the basis of sexuality. So that's the purpose of this analysis, is to really go in deep and say, what is the relative likelihood that people who identify with a diverse gender or sexuality, admittedly this is in adulthood that we're asking because our survey is 16 years of age and over are our participants, and we're saying during childhood, what did you experience?
But also that gives you a lot of data to say, you know, people will carry into adulthood then a lot of trauma from those formative years. And I think, you know, what the study said to me was, my gosh, this is such valuable data to help people decide on what are the best services that we should be offering to this cohort of people who need some medical support in those post years. And also, you know, what do you need to do now to protect the existing children who may be at more risk of these maltreatments because they come from a diverse gender background?
Absolutely. And what we found was it was about three times the risk, both for gender diverse and sexuality diverse Australians, which, you know, is quite substantial when you think of, you know, what are the kind of demographic characteristics. You know, if you knew that there was a segment of the population that was at much greater risk of something, surely you would want to invest in, first of all, better prevention to stop it from happening in the first place. And secondly, as you rightly point out, how do we adjust the kind of, you know, medical, health, psychological services that we provide to those who have already suffered? And I think on both of those fronts, there's a long way that we have to go. You know, in our primary prevention, so stopping child maltreatment from occurring in the first place, admittedly, the Australian government does have a national child sexual abuse strategy that does particularly identify LGBTQIA plus children and families as a target group. So I applaud the government for that, but we absolutely need to follow through not only with sexual abuse, but all the other forms of child maltreatment, which I think is really slipping off the radar. And of course, we know that one of the prevention strategies that we should have in place for other forms of child maltreatment is about parenting, improving the quality of parenting, improving not only the advice but the supports that are available, evidence-based supports. And so if parents who are raising children who are diverse, how are we tailoring the supports that we provide? How are we getting to those parents in the first place? You know, they might be struggling because they don't necessarily even know that explicitly that they are the parent of a gender diverse or a sexuality diverse child. If you know, the young person hasn't come out, if you know, it's a complicated space. But I think what we have to do is start thinking about where is gender diversity and where is sexuality diversity in conversations around delivery of evidence-based parenting supports. And I'm really not seeing that happening yet.
Because I guess the first port of call for a lot of parents would be maybe their local GP. I mean, if they're not, particularly if you're not living in an inner city area or a metropolitan area, in a regional town, the first port of call would be your GP. Now, are GPs... have they been given the right education or the right, like, are they informed so that then they can help advise? I can imagine that would be one of the first places you would have to go.
Absolutely. And so they're kind of one of the target groups that we would want to call out is how do we, both in the pre-service training for doctors and in the kind of ongoing professional development and supports that are given to them, how are we highlighting these issues? And so that they're asking the right questions. And sometimes it's even, you know, a language issue. Like, you know, we don't want doctors to just simply be saying, you know, your son or your daughter. We don't just simply want them to assume talking, let's say, about sexual health advice for parents, that they assume that it's going to be an opposite sex partner. So how is that coming into the communication strategies that doctors are using with, you know, with parents at the right time? But it also, you know, it's not just about when there's a problem. It should actually be about supporting good, positive parenting practices. And that happens, you know, at the earliest stages. It happens at childcare centres. It happens at schools. You know, it happens at the, you know, the infant welfare centres or whatever they're called in different states and territories nowadays. I don't particularly like the phrase, you know, maternal and child family services, because, of course, we should be focusing on dads as well. You know, we need to be getting in early and having these diversity conversations and better support right from the get-go.
So I think that leads nicely onto the next part of the unknown part of the study that you actually found through the great research that you've completed, is just the number of young Australians that identify with gender diversity that isn't the normal binary ones that we accept. Now, those numbers were staggering, Daryl. 9.5% do not consider themselves to be heterosexual in total, but between 16 to 24-year-olds, that number jumped up to almost 19%. Now, that's a fascinating statistic.
Absolutely. You know, it shows, like, between the older participants in our study, which includes me, you know, age 45 and plus, the proportion who identified with a diverse sexuality was less than 1 in 20, compared to around 1 in 5 in the 16 to 24 years of age. And we saw similar patterns around gender identity. The rates, of course, are much smaller than sexuality diversity, but we found around about 0.5% of the population in the 45 years and over age group were identifying as a diverse gender, and that's climbed to 2.3%. So, you know, that's a massive increase from 0.5 in the 45 and over group to 2.3% of 16 to 24 year olds.
And yet again,
kind of joining those two conversations together, it then means that this is not a minute and irrelevant part of the population, you know. So when we're thinking about both our prevention efforts and our support for those who unfortunately have been subjected to different forms of maltreatment, and I've got to say our data also show that they were more likely to experience not just one type but multiple forms. In other words, experiencing, let's say, sexual abuse and emotional abuse, or experiencing exposure to domestic violence and neglect. So given that increased likelihood of multiple forms of maltreatment, how are our mental health and our general health services addressing this when they're even thinking about, you know, responding to trauma across the population?
And also just getting some basic support services in. I mean, we go back to the basic education. If 19% of our young people identify as something other than heterosexual, then all of the medical, both, you know, the physical and the mental provisions that we're providing have got to start understanding what does that mean for them in the future when that cohort becomes older? What are the medical service support needs that we have? And you're right, it's a massive number. It's climbing up to a quarter of the population.
Yes, yeah. And when you think, you know, from the perspective of a GP with, you know, a client load coming in, if they are dealing with young people, you know, it means every fifth client coming in is not going to be identifying as heterosexual.
That's incredible work.
Thank you.
Now, Daryl, unfortunately, we do have to leave you here because we have run out of time. I definitely would love to have you back on to hear more about, you know, the outcome of the where all this great content is going to go and all this data.
Yeah, I was going to say, Daryl, a lot of people listen to this program will be very interested to read more about the research paper. If people wanted to make contact with you to understand more, where can they learn from?
Yeah, so the as I said, this is part of the Australian Child Maltreatment Study. So we have a website, acms.au. So people can go there, they can read all about the study, they can find links to free access to each of these articles, or they can look online at the Australian Catholic University. I'm at the Institute of Child Protection Studies, and our website as well has links to the study and to all of the articles. And I would love to have further opportunities to engage with you and your listeners and to hear about what people see as being the important next steps once we take on board the implications of this really important data.
Okay, Professor Daryl Higgins, Director of the Institute of Child Protection Services at the ACU. Thank you for all of your work, Daryl. This is a sterling, sterling piece of work. And, you know, to the rest of your team who've done a lot of the legwork going through the numbers, yeah, it's outstanding. Thank you for your work. And, yeah, we'll talk to you soon, Daryl. Take care.
Thank you.
You're on Saturday Magazine with Paul and Fiona. Stay with us. We've got a whole bunch more coming up.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.